Newton, and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Marie from Athens, Georgia. Welcome, Marie.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Great. I understand some big snow may have prevented that.
Yeah, almost. We had almost had a blizzard here in Georgia, which is pretty unusual. So after 2 days, there's still lots of snow on the ground. We had 6 inches, so it was kind of a thrill for us.
Wow, sounds very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Marie, you are a sitting group coordinator in Athens, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that and how that relates to practice as a whole.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, for a few years now, we've been fortunate enough to have a sitting group in Athens, and that's a really special thing to have. It supports practice in a lot of ways, much like the monastery does. So we have regular meetings each week, a couple of meetings per week, and we come together and sit in meditation and do walking meditation and do group discussions. And, I just find that really helpful. It really supports my practice, and it's a privilege to be able to support other people's practice. Having lived so far away from the monastery for so many years, it's just really nice to have that solid practice time each week.
Yes. You know what's coming up for me as you're talking, and it relates to the recent emails about keeping the practice doors open, is that, you know, the monastery is there for us. For me, it's a rock of support. I know that I can count on that. I have my heart reflected there. And then you in Athens, Georgia, are doing the same thing on a local level for people there.
Yeah, and the monastery is doing it for all of us. And then I get to give back a little bit by being the person that sets it up and makes sure, you know, we have the meeting and that we follow the guidelines. And, it's really a privilege for me both ways. It's such a privilege to be able to practice with the monastery and then, you know, to be able to offer it here. Because I think back to when I first started in practice and I was pretty much just living here. You know, I didn't know any people that did a practice like this, and, you know, it was really difficult.
Yes.
And so I'm really, you know, really grateful that we can have this here so far away.
Yes. It's really wonderful to know that the monastery supports you in your role and that you are supporting the monastery and then supporting all those local people there.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about a lot of the new changes that are going on. And, you know, from what I'm hearing, the monastery is going to be able to offer things like, more conference calls that support practice and workshops by phone. And I've even heard that Sherry may be doing a workshop through Skype soon that people can participate in through Skype. And so for people like me who live all the way across the country, it's just really great to have these new ways to plug in.
It's exciting, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, so anywhere you're connected to the internet, anywhere in the world, you can get on Skype and be a part of this workshop.
Yeah, and I can say a little bit. I just heard about this today, and it's kind of exciting. It's going to be in Palo Alto, and it's a workshop Sherry's offering on, I think it's called Adversity Opportunity. And my understanding is the monastery is working really hard to figure out a way to allow people to participate from anywhere through Skype in that workshop.
Yes, it's great. And to me, it really ties in with the whole keeping the practice doors open drive, because I don't know if you have this experience, but conditioning will tell me much of the time that practice is not important and I don't need it and all that, failing to recognize that my life works as a result of practice and how important it is for me to support that and make that available. And that for me, that monetary financial donation really speaks to putting a priority on what's important to me.
Yeah, yeah, I've had a similar experience with that too, and you know, I'm really excited now about some of the new things, because I feel like we're really being invited into a deeper commitment to the monastery and to our own practice in the process. And, you know, that's just really exciting because, yeah, conditioning will talk me out of being committed if I'm not careful. And
yeah.
So it's great, you know, to be able to sign up for things and you know, make a financial commitment and make a practice commitment. And it's really good for me, and then it supports the monastery, and then the monastery can support people all over the world.
Yes, yes. So, yes, as you just said, supporting people all over the world, whether it's via conference calls or Skype workshops like that, and also for people like yourself who have a local sitting group and really provide that local physical presence where we can practice and deepen our practice.
Right, right. And, you know, after all the years of participating with the monastery, I feel like I've received so much that, you know, it's really nice to, you know, be able to give something back.
Yes, that's my experience as well. It's really, and I've heard Sherry talk about this, that we can practice as a way to say thank you for all that, mm-hmm. that we've received.
Right, right.
And an important piece for me is staying close to practice so that I can continue to see things. So conditioning will tell me that, oh, it's not important to go to this workshop, or it's really not important to donate, or, and yet at a deeper level, I know that it's that conversation between me and practice generally that assists me in staying centered and in having the life that I want.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems to me that conditioning is always trying to kind of intervene in that relationship with
yeah.
practice in the monastery. And
yeah.
so it's a really great thing to have things that require, you know, to make a commitment that requires that I keep showing up either financially or with my time. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can show up financially, you can show up with your time. There's a lot of ways that we can commit to practice, and in that same way, commit to ourselves and to our own awakening and deepening of awareness.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's really great. When I first started with practice, you know, I'd mostly listen to Sherry's tapes, and occasionally I'd be able to go to the monastery or go to a workshop. But now it's just there's a smorgasbord. You know, there's just so many ways I can stay plugged into the practice, and you know, it's just really great to have so much being offered to us.
Yes, yes, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. So there in Athens, you meet a couple times a week, and you have meditation, and you have group discussion also?
Yeah, we have meditation, and then we have group discussion, much like it all happens at the monastery. And we keep a practice environment or a privileged environment like we have at the monastery. You know, we're in a small town, so a lot of us know each other in other places.
Yeah.
And so when we come together for these meetings, it's just a solid practice time. And so it's not social, and it's just an opportunity for people to really focus inward in a really safe environment to do that.
Yes, and to me, one of the things that I'm hearing in what you're saying is we do this like the monastery. We do this like the monastery. And to me, what I get out of that is there's a consistent theme of practice that shows up in the same way, whether we're at the monastery, we're in our local sitting group, we're in an email class, we're in a Skype workshop. With the monastery providing the model for awareness and practice, it's really seems like a clear transmission of practice in all these different forms.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really been great to have the monastery as the model for that and to go there and experience how important that privileged environment is for practice, and then to be able to create it in all kinds of places. And, yeah, now we're going to be doing things by Skype, and we can carry that privileged environment, and that's strong support for practice into all those different venues.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And we can go out in the world in our daily lives carrying that practice with us.
That's right. Absolutely right.
Yeah. Marie, thanks so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. That was a great practice conversation.
Great. Yes, it was fun.
Uh-huh. I was really glad to hear the two of you focus so much on the importance of the privileged environment. Because, as you know, that's one of the most difficult places for everybody. It's difficult for all of us. Wherever we started out, that was probably one of the things that we shared as sort of a stumbling block. because it feels so odd. It's kind of awkward and uncomfortable and there's that feeling of, but I want to know these people. These are spiritual people. I want to be in relationship with spiritual people. Are you still there, Michael?
I'm right here. I'm smiling.
Okay.
As you're talking.
All right. Well, I'm just going on and on. And then I thought, oh, what if he's not there? It was very quiet. So I'd like to have a relationship, and I'd really like to have a relationship with somebody who's spiritual. And so, you know, I mean, what better place to meet the kind of people you want to have in your life than in a meditation practice? And yet, we've all, in whatever way, come to realize that that's actually not a good way to make friends, in that socializing relationship sort of way. Because then when we are in relationship that way with people, there's a tendency for egos to come in, and then people start feeling unsafe, and we've had this situation in the past where two people are participating in the practice, and then their relationship ends, and it's like, who gets custody of the practice? So it's an excellent thing to have a place where we can come together with like-hearted, like-minded people, and not have to be social. Not know a single thing about them, where they live, what they do, who they are, anything other than we all do awareness practice together. And we want to have support for that, and we want to offer support for that. That's it. End of story.
Yes.
And there's that little transition that we have to get through from, oh, this is just too weird, I can't stand it, to, what a relief not to have to make small talk and chat and be clever and popular.
Yes. So for people for whom the term privileged environment is a new one, can you explain what some of the concrete elements are?
Yeah, we practice together by leaving one another alone. So... We don't make small talk. When we come to sitting practice, we walk in silence. We take off our shoes. We go to our spot. We make gassho. We sit down and we meditate. And then, depending on what happens next, if it's a discussion group, then people will turn around. But it's not. We face the room. Or we face the facilitator, but we don't sit there and look around at each other, so we keep custody of the eyes. And that way, if whatever is going on with somebody, there's a feeling of being completely supported but having privacy. And so those are probably the two biggest elements of the privileged environment. The silence, well, the not socializing, and the custody of the eyes.
Yes, and for me, a critical one for me also is that when I speak about my own experience, and I have a conversation with the facilitator, and no one will ever comment to me about that conversation ever again.
That's right, and no one will comment to the facilitator about your conversation.
Yeah.
Because the facilitator will stop that too. We're all asked, yes, as you say, to speak for ourselves from our own experience. Yes, as you say, that's a way to feel very safe, knowing that you can say anything and that's the end of it. You have whatever exchange you have with the facilitator, usually being reflected, primarily being reflected, so you have a chance to really hear yourself. And then depending on what goes on, there might be some sort of reminders or encouragement about practice, and then we go on with our lives.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as Marie was saying, you know, in a town where people run into each other in all different kinds of situations, maybe even people would work together, that sort of thing, or see one another in social situations, to have that time of practicing together without any of that going on, and as you say, without anybody ever bringing anything about your practice up at another time, that's a gift. That's a treasure.
Treasure. It's a true treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we have a number of callers on our call-in show.
Let's talk to them.
Talk to them. Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sridevi from San Francisco.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Enjoying the rain.
Yes, yes. It is very rainy today.
What's going on?
So conditioning has really got me stuck these days. And what the content that I'm kind of stuck around, or conditioning has me stuck around, is a relationship that I'm in. I've been with my partner for a little over a year now, and in doing a much more awareness practice and deepening my practice, I've been looking at kind of the way conditioning has prevented me from kind of being those things that I want in a relationship, you know, being loving, being communicative. And so I've really done a lot of work around seeing what comes up for me and prevents me from being that. But an interesting thing that's happening now is really looking at accepting what I want from someone else in a relationship. I think I've been very focused on how am I being in the relationship, and now I'm looking at, well, how does this work with my partner? And what the messaging that was very interesting, there was kind of two different messages that came up for me. One was that, well, I don't deserve it. You know, I don't deserve that from a partner, that which I am giving them. So I've been looking at that, and what conditioning kind of says to me is, okay, well, you deserve it, but only to a certain point. So of course you deserve love, but you should just be happy with whatever love he gives you. You shouldn't put any guidelines on what that love should be. Just be happy with kind of whatever you get. So for me, it comes up around saying, I love you. I would like my partner to say I love you, and he doesn't say I love you. Some conditioning says, well, you need to be that for yourself. It's kind of like using practice against me a little.
Oh, yeah.
And saying,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely using a lot of, oh, you need to give that to yourself. You can't expect that from your partner. It's too much to expect, and you need to figure out how to give that to yourself. And so that's really, I'm really stuck kind of right there. But then when I see
May I? Yes, absolutely. Because it's clear to me anyway, listening to this, that your real relationship is with conditioning.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to, and I'm sure your partner does too. But it's just good to be upfront about the fact that you actually have this intimate relationship with conditioning, and you're sort of cheating on conditioning with this other person.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not how we like to think about it, but when we stop and look at it, that's really what's going on. Because who gets put first in this?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have many, many conversations with conditioning, many more conversations, many more serious, in-depth, vulnerable you know, all of those revealing conversations with conditioning than you would ever have with your partner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else?
Well, so I see that, and so, and I'm kind of trying to, you know, figure out how to work on that. And then the place that it kind of goes to, okay, so if I get to the place where I accept these things and then I believe I deserve these things, you know, then what does that mean for my current relationship? And I have had this conversation, I will say, once with my partner. I was very honest and said, here's kind of where I am, and I do want someone who says I love you, and I do want someone who calls me. And I took it to that kind of deeper level because this is what that means to me. It means that I'm a part of your life, and there's a value and a connection in our relationship. And then where I get stuck again is, so what if my partner isn't able to do that? He's just not the kind of guy who says I love you. He's just not the kind of guy who calls. And
right.
I'm attaching
now,
all this. Yeah.
So there are a couple of, thank God we don't have to put him in that position tonight. Okay.
Yeah.
There'd be a couple of things to look at and work out first.
Yeah.
Okay? So the first thing that I would suggest to you is, and does it feel like the two of you have fairly good communication?
No. I mean, no. Not in this way. Not on the deeper, not in a deeper way about us. We have, like, great communication about how our day was, but
yeah,
nothing around
how
we're feeling.
And what's going on in politics and the national economy should be doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's an interesting one right there, isn't it? So my first encouragement, the first thing that I would encourage you to do is get out of that relationship with conditioning.
Okay.
Now that's the first job for all of us. Okay. So.
Yes.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't do anything about anything else in your life. It's
mm-hmm.
just until that happens. It's just that sorting those things out is really important. So I'm fond of saying spiritual practice doesn't begin until the beatings stop.
Yes.
Okay. Now that doesn't mean you shouldn't sit. You shouldn't go to workshops. You shouldn't, you know, read books that inspire you or whatever, but beatings are not spiritual practice. And you can't, all of the things that you do, as long as you're receiving beatings from self-hate, all of the
mm-hmm.
things you do are getting ready to get ready.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So
yeah.
I always say that to people so that those two things are really clear. One, beatings are not awareness practice,
mm-hmm.
number one. So we need to separate those two. And in most people's minds and lives, they are intimately involved. In fact,
yes.
most people cannot tell the difference. Okay? Good people get beaten up. Good people feel guilty. Good people feel bad. Good people have a voice that tells them what they're doing wrong. That's just such a deep belief system that it takes a long time to even entertain the possibility that those two things don't have anything to do with each other, okay? So then, realizing that, there is something that is possible for us when we actually begin awareness practice that is not possible for us as long as we are open to being beaten.
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I say that to you because it's an exact parallel to what you're looking at with your relationship. You actually cannot have a relationship with another person as long as you're in an abusive relationship with conditioning.
Mm.
It's not possible. Mm. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not relating to this other person, because obviously you are. But it is not the relationship that you think about when you think about having a relationship. which explains mm-hmm. why most relationships don't work. Yeah.
Do you mean that in the sense of that I'm thinking about the relationship I should have as opposed to the one that I'm in, or
you're allowing conditioned mind to define relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship that you actually authentically know is possible for you,
yeah,
is a relationship, an open-hearted relationship that comes from center.
Yeah.
And then the relationship that you're in, now don't take any of this personally because I'm telling you, you are not alone in this, okay? But the relationship that you are actually in is an intimate relationship, an abusive intimate relationship with conditioning.
Yeah.
That actually informs your relationship with your partner.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can't be who you really are as long as you're in that relationship with conditioning. And you can't actually be available to a relationship with him
mm-hmm.
as long as you're in that abusive relationship with conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah.
What happens with people is, because most people are in that relationship with conditioning, and then they try to relate to one another in a loving sort of way. But when
mm-hmm.
two people in an abusive relationship are trying to be loving toward one another, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, now we're going the other way. It's like you and your partner are actually having an affair. But who you're really each married to is somebody else. And each of you is in an abusive relationship in that marriage. And
mm-hmm.
then you try to come together in this affair to be loving toward one another. But that's not the life you're living.
Mm-hmm.
So I just offer that to you because I suspect you are a person who has a deep level of sincerity about awareness practice.
Yes.
And so if you kind of keep your eyes on what it is that you're really about,
mm-hmm.
then the relationship that you're in with your partner is going
mm-hmm.
to be very helpful and supportive of your practice
mm-hmm.
because what you're learning to do in that is to be unconditionally loving with you,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
unconditionally loving with him,
mm-hmm.
and it has nothing to do with all of that crapola about you should provide that for yourself. If you were really centered, then you know, all of that is the abusive relationship that you're leaving behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. But
And then down the road.
Yeah.
And at some point you'll know if you get to the point where you say, you know, I just love you like crazy and I gotta go because I'm ready for something different in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what's been interesting is watching the thought that happens where if I get to that place where I go, if I have this unconditional love for myself and I truly accept and don't beat myself up for what I want and can just love that about myself, the next thought that comes in, well, what does that mean for my relationship? And if I accept that, that means that I can't be with
him.
Right. And I just know I took a step back and went, well, why does it mean that?
Yeah,
why are they connected? They don't have to be.
No, and that's the conversation that you're not going to have.
Yes.
Because being unconditionally loving of yourself
mm-hmm.
has nothing to do with content.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not, I love myself unconditionally, therefore I support myself in wanting X.
Mm-hmm.
And I
know this has been a topic I've heard so many times, and it's still I'm always so curious about it. Then how do you? if I get to that place that you were talking about when I'm, you know, though I love him, maybe I'll come to a point and say, I'm going to go try something else. How do you know? How do you know how to make when that decision is right for you? Like
that's the trick. That's the secret. And that's why we practice.
Yeah.
So that we are in the moment that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
And we are truly in that moment. And in that moment, everything we need to know is there for us. Now, that's true in every moment, but we're not there for it because we're busy being in this abusive relationship with conditioning.
Yeah.
So as that clears away, you may never. I mean, you might spend the rest of your lives together, and you would just look back and say, huh, wow, I never actually did make a decision to stay in this relationship. But here we are, old people, so I guess we did.
But
or,
can I ask just one more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
So, and then I guess where I'm getting stuck is if I love myself unconditionally and I can get to that place and understand my needs and the things that I want.
That's it. There it is.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's tripping you up.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's all of that is coming from conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
If I love myself unconditionally, and here comes conditioned mind with its list of, and therefore that means this, and you need to do that, and if you do then that, and if not then, but unconditionally loving is unconditionally loving. It is not content related.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no me who wants or needs X in unconditional love. Unconditional love is complete.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a tricky one. But that's what we're going for in awareness practice. And you see, because, and here's the because that might make sense of this. Unconditional love is not individual.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something a separate self experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is stepping beyond the illusion of separation into center, into the unconditional. Right? So there, we're not dragging in a personality who wants and needs and thinks and likes and dislikes and has to have and, okay? That's the illusion of a separate self. We are actually dropping that and coming to this centered place. From that centered place, life will live you. And it will be complete. And you will be where you are, doing what you're doing with whomever or without. And there will be nothing left undone. Nothing, no dissatisfaction.
And that's, I think, what I have a hard time thinking about. Because, of course, all of my friends have an opinion of, well, of course a guy should do that for you, and of course they should like that. And I'm just like, oh,
Yeah.
Of course you should have someone who says I love you. And then I go, I do want that. And how do I honor what I want and then be in relationship with someone who's not giving that? And it's just,
You can see that you have drifted out here into the conditioned world of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yeah.
So one thing that you don't want to do, and then we need to dash, is to turn to egocentric karmic conditioning in the form of other people to reinforce egocentric karmic conditioning in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, egos getting advice from egos are always going to get ego advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's going on. So the same conditioning in you as exists in them, starts talking to each other, and dissatisfaction is not far behind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you
soon. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us tonight. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Sherry, you know, Michael, that last call, just last caller, just just put her finger right on the whole difficulty that we face. Everything in our lives teaches us to think. And we don't realize that what we think of as thinking is simply entering into the world of conditioned mind. And that the way out of that is to find the silence of presence, the in-between the thoughts space of who we really are. And so when she said, something like, I have a hard time thinking about that, or I can't really... and it's true. I mean, everything that we're looking for is on the other side of thinking about it, which makes it a very hard sell for conditioned mind. Anyway, that's what I was doing as I was listening to the Zen Blues Quartet.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And what occurs to me as you said that is that we've been given a lot of bad information about what thinking is.
Oh, God, people who devote their lives to thinking have no idea what it actually is. Yeah, true.
Sherry, we have about 4 more callers here.
All right.
Next call, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Joel.
Hey, Joel.
Sure. Hi, you can hear me good. I want to get some support about this insight or realization that I'm having a really hard time holding.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I almost want to commit myself to a mental hospital. And I'm not really sure how to talk about it, so I'll kind of use a metaphor, and perhaps you can help me clarify it.
I'll do my best.
So it's like what I believe to be out there is not really out there. And like not only that, but there is no out there. And it's like this whole experience is taking place in my head, and that everything that I think is life is not really life. Like the world I see and hear and touch and interact with is in some way not real, like an illusion, and in this imaginary world that I experience and where I think things are real, but nothing really exists. Like I'm kind of experiencing life in a way from inside my own head, and the image that comes up is like
And here's the truly alarming piece of that.
Is that
your head is contained within that.
My head is contained. I'm not sure I see that.
Well, it's that the illusion is that it's all happening inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great, I don't know if it's a great book, but it's a book about a great insight. And I think the fellow's name was Douglas Harding. And I think the book was called On Having No Head. And his enlightening moment was when he realized that what he is like a stalk. Okay, so there's the body, and you, if you stand up, you can look down, and there are your feet, and here come your legs, and then at a certain point, you know, you lose sight of the top part of the stalk, okay? And then what's on the stalk is everything that you can experience without limits, without end. Now, when he looked in the mirror, of course, he saw that he had a head. And he could look around and see that everybody else had heads. But his actual experience, his experience was not that he had a head, but that the entire universe, all of it that he could perceive and everything beyond that, all of the influences that exist in life actually rested on that stalk, and that that stalk was contained within all of that that could be perceived.
It's hard to take in.
And we cannot take it in. Yeah, we can't take it in.
Sure. I had this, it's like this image that comes up, like, inside my head. It's just weird to talk about, like, there's, like, this movie taking, like, somebody, it's like somebody's watching a movie, but, like, I'm, in a sense, the movie, and if whoever is just watching the movie would just stop watching the movie, like, everything would be okay. I mean, does that make sense?
Well, who is it, and this is not necessarily an intellectual question, but
uh-huh.
Who is it who has a problem with it being the way it is? In other words, I will often say to people, you think you're looking at the world, but you're just looking at the inside of your own head.
Right,
okay?
So nothing is really real, or it's only real inside my head.
Well, okay, walk over and bang your head against the door jamb. And then tell me if that happened inside your head or on your forehead.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I hear in this is conditioned mind taking advantage of an insight to try to drive somebody crazy about something that's not actually a problem. So there's a great deal of activity and angst with this that could easily be overcome with a simple, so what?
So the sense that there is something more to life than what I am experiencing is just something that I'm telling myself?
Don't you think?
I'm not sure.
No, but that's the whole point. That's what fuels that the drama. Oh, there's something more to life than what I'm experiencing. Really? Well, okay. If there is, then perhaps someday you'll know. If not, you know, in Zen, this is the moment of, have you had your dinner? Then wash your dishes. So what happens to us is in these great existential tragedies is that we lose sight of life. So is there more to life? Well, first of all, why would there need to be? And are you actually living the life that is available to you? If you are completely, wholeheartedly, with nothing left over, living the life that you are capable of living, that question would never occur to you. It's a question that only arises in a mind that believes itself or is attempting to maintain a belief that it is separate from life.
Right. The
You with me?
I'm with you.
Yeah. So, again, you know, people ask me endlessly because there are some very, there are a lot of very famous books that lead into this kind of nonsense. You know, what is my purpose in life? I can't find my purpose in life. I must have a purpose in life. Why do we assume that? What if my purpose in life is to be alive? If it occurred to me that my purpose in life is to be alive, then I would put all of my attention and awareness on being alive rather than assuming that what I experience of life when I am doing everything possible to maintain a belief that I am separate from it is all there is of life. Did you go with me on that one?
I did.
Yeah. So if I want to know what life is, then it's important that I become one with life. If I want to know what water is, it would be really important to jump into it completely. Yeah?
Yes.
Because sitting on the edge of the pool or the edge of the ocean or the lake or whatever saying, wow, that's water, isn't it? Wow. I wonder what, wow. Okay? Just not the same.
One quick question.
Yeah.
In your experience, can you get to, again, can you become truly one with life living a householder's existence? So basically, how important is it? Can you really do that?
Well,
or is the chances very hard?
It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard.
How hard?
For all of the reasons that we always talk about, you know, that life is designed, egocentric karmic conditioning designed society for egocentric karmic conditioning. So distraction is the name of the game. Pressure, stress, anxiety, endless messages, a fear, and, you know, it's just on and on and on and on. It's very, very hard to do. However, mm-hmm. awakening and lifestyle are not the same thing. So, you know, there are a lot of people who have lived awakened lives as householders. Okay, a lot. Maybe not a lot. But we do have examples. It's just very, very, very hard. Gandhi was a householder.
So then how does one, if they decide to take that next step and find a monastery or an environment to practice that is conducive to going the full way or to waking up the way the Buddha talks about it or the way I imagine him to talk about it?
How did you start that sentence?
How does, if one chooses to wake up in the sense that the Buddha, in my idea, is talking about, and you, it's extremely difficult, if not almost impossible, to do living a householder's life, how does one find an environment, a monastery, to actually practice in that level of commitment?
Well, for me, I would just walk out of my front door and make a left turn.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's one, you know, within a 9-iron away from where I'm sitting.
But does not accept new monks, or is not taking monks?
Oh, always taking the sincere.
For some reason, I thought the monastery was closed to actually come and live and take an extended stay there. Like, is that not true?
That it's closed to that?
Yes.
No. What it's closed to is people having some sort of romantic impulse about what it would be like to train, and then 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks into it going, oh my God, this is really hard. I don't like this. I want to leave.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, over the years, we had just plenty of that to know that that's not what we want to do. However, we have three new monks there right now, all very hardworking, sincere people who have come there because they want to awaken and end suffering. What they share in terms of characteristics is when their practice gets difficult, they don't start believing the voices that say, and this means I need to be somewhere else doing something else.
Right. I mean, that seems like the time you stay.
Yes. Yeah. Not that those voices don't arise. They certainly do. But the vast majority of people don't have that kind of tenacity. And so we do require people to go through quite a rigorous sort of assessment process.
How would somebody start that assessment process?
Well, we have month-long retreats, and that's usually the way that many people will start that process.
I did that. I did the month-long retreat.
Yeah. So you might look into doing it again if you're sincere about training.
Okay. Sherry, thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. Bye. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Joel. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be back.
All right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, I'm seeing a lot of red lights here.
Boom. Okay, we'll talk faster.
Okay.
I'll talk less. How about that?
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air.
Hi, this is Lisa from Seattle.
Hey there.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Mostly,
what's going on?
Just wanted to call in and as kind of part of my commitment to call in, for one.
Oh, good. Uh-huh.
And also, I just finished the retreat in the back of your book, Making a Change for Good.
Oh,
and it's the first time I've gotten all the way through it, so
I'm pretty
excited about that. And now I'm in the process of trying to figure out what the next topic is going to be so I can start again.
Excellent. You know, I know a couple of people who have actually done that every month since the book came out. Can you imagine? I can't, quite frankly.
Well,
it's just
stunning. You know, it's not always easy to get through it.
Yeah.
But I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah,
it was
definitely
very helpful.
Worth it. Yeah, because each time you are really different. Everything is different. The world is different. Not only is it could you focus on a different project each time, different content, but what a fabulous way to see yourself be different.
Yeah, I think I could even focus on the same content.
Uh-huh. Yeah, probably.
For a while.
Yeah.
But it was just really, really, really helpful in not only working through whatever it is that content was, but seeing the process, and also keeping me just keeping me focused on practice.
Uh-huh.
You know, a little bit more, just one extra thing besides meditation, besides listening to the show and the archives and everything else. So it just gave me one extra tool.
And that's the secret to the whole deal, isn't it? It's bringing one more thing into practice, so that reminds me. I focus on that. Oh, that brings me back. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Yes, that causes me to remember. Yes, I'm here. Okay, yeah, I'll do that. That'll help ground me.
Yeah, and that has been
deal.
For me. I've really noticed
mm-hmm.
that doing all those little things.
Yep.
You know, occasional
yep.
retreat thrown in, but
exactly.
all those little things are what really help.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. In the same way that all the little distractions in life pull us away. You know, for most people, there's one of those signs that you see periodically that indicates, you know, anybody can make it through a crisis. You know, it's the little day-to-day things that kill you.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how conditioning operates. You know, it's not the big things in life that cause people to suffer. It's being pulled away by the constant something wrong, not enough, that conversation of dissatisfaction. That's what does it to us. And so to find the opposite of that, the little things all day long that bring us back to ourselves and remind us of who we are and what we're doing and what we want, makes all the difference.
Exactly. So that's just my little grateful shout out. Thank you so much for all that you do and all the practice.
Well, thank you.
And I'll let the next person get on.
All right. All right. Good night.
Short and sweet. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us tonight. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a couple more callers there.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Maria. I'm calling from Washington State.
Hello? There's a lot of activity in the Pacific Northwest this evening.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah. What's going on?
Well, I was hoping for some suggestions on trying to reconnect with finding compassion for myself during a real difficult time. It feels like I can't keep from believing the stories, and so I just feel like I can't find compassion for myself when I have in the past.
Can you give me the story of her unforgivable sins and crimes in 20 words or less?
I guess I'll call her she then. She's made a mess of her life by making bad choices, and all the good times are over for her. That's kind of the gist of it.
And who are you, and where were you as she was making all these bad choices and decisions? Were you kind of sitting there in your black robe on your bench, keeping your own counsel as you let her go off and self-destruct?
You know, I'm not sure. It's really hard for me to see it. It's just a time when the evidence, and I can imagine this, and I'm trying to have the experience of it, of knowing that it's just conditioning, but the evidence from conditioning seems so real that I'm being beaten, I guess, sort of mercilessly.
Yep, you are. And now you realize you're her again, right?
Yeah.
So there was somebody going along, doing the best she could, making the best decisions she could make, you know, a regular flawed human being without her superwoman powers going all the time. And it didn't come out the way somebody said it should, and so now she gets blamed for everything. Now,
yeah.
Again, this is somebody who went through this on her own. She didn't have any superpowers directing her and guiding her and making it easier for her either. They just let her go along doing whatever she could do, waiting there at the end of the trail to start beating her for not having met their standards.
Right.
That's kind of crummy, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't want her to feel bad anymore.
I don't either. I don't either. So what are you going to do?
Well,
how about letting her know that you know she did the best she could? How about apologizing to her for the fact that there was nobody there to help her or take better care of her, to comfort her, to reassure her, to support her, and how heroic she's been getting through this as well as she did given those circumstances.
Yeah.
And I'd
like to access the, you know, the mentor part of me that can share that with her.
Yes. How about making a commitment to be there for her as she begins the process of taking the next steps in her life, whatever that is?
Okay.
Because, you know, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, she, whatever happened, and here you all are. All right. And what conditioning would have is the story to end here. Okay, she's a failure. She's blown it. It's over. That's it. Just sit down right there by the edge of the trail and die.
Yeah. Oh, that's
possible,
exactly what it feels like.
Yeah. But what's possible is to say, wow, been kind of a rugged journey. And so let's make a little plan here for what we're going to do next. Let's rest up, you know, get a little rejuvenation thing going here, make a plan for ourselves, and then together move into the whatever is next.
Okay.
It's so cowardly. Conditioning is so cowardly. You know, I'll give a little thing here. I don't know where we are with time, actually. I'm just living in my own little dream world. But I watch what the media does now. I mean, I've always watched what the media does, but especially now, you know, where criticizing and picking and finding flaws in and, you know, predicting cleverly the most dire outcomes for everything is just, I don't know about you, but it seems to me it's more popular than ever. As the ship goes down, there are the people who just seem to want to direct everything at how any kind of rescue operation is not going to work.
Right.
Yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a perfect, we can see conditioned mind right there in front of us. You can pick up any paper or magazine. You can turn on the TV, the news, wherever it is. Just pick it up. There's conditioned mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Something wrong and not enough. It's absolutely cowardly to sit around and point out it's not so much pointing out what other people have done wrong. I mean, that's you know, bad enough and certainly a national pastime. But to point out what people are trying to do to make a difference and only find fault in it without ever offering a viable alternative is truly cowardly, and that is the specialty of conditioned mind. So don't fall for it. Anybody who wants to criticize you better have a better idea and how they're going to implement that and the support system that they're going to bring to you while that's being implemented, or don't even spend a second of your time listening to them.
Okay.
Well, I'm practicing dropping the conversation and
absolutely.
And trying not to be daunted by how often I have to do that.
And I'm going to suggest too that while you drop that one conversation, you pick up another one. So if you like that image of that person by the edge of the trail, you know, there she is. She's come across the desert and the mountains, and then she had to row across an ocean, and then here she is. You know, she's up on the shore, and she's exhausted, and people are standing around yelling at her about what a bad job she's done.
Yeah.
Right? So if that strikes you as unfair, then part that crowd, go get her, and start taking care of her. Tell her not what she's done wrong, but tell her what you're going to do to help her.
Okay.
Don't be the cowardly media.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, those are really good reminders. Thank you.
And then let us know, okay?
Okay, I will.
Yeah, don't let them talk you into going off for months or years or whatever, just in conversation with them, because they got a whole program to get you back.
Okay.
Yeah, keep that image of her. There she is. She's worked hard. She's been heroic. For God's sake, give her some support.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome. Take good care.
Okay, thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Maria. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we've got a couple more callers and a couple more minutes.
Let's give it our best.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Valerie from North Dakota.
Hey, Valerie.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I haven't talked to you in a long time, but calling to say thanks, because I've been reading your emails and I've been listening to the show once in a while, and you, your idea is just, ideas and whatever. I'm really nervous right now, but I was looking on the internet at some videos. I found these Buddhist missionary videos. It's like they're like cartoons for kids, like you see like the Christian cartoons for kids too. And I saw this one story that was really exciting. The one where there was this guy who was terrorizing people and like a village, and then the Buddha got him to see the way, and then he went back to the village, and people were still kind of, you know, throwing rocks at him and stuff. So he went to the Buddha. He said, "Well, why are they still doing this? I've changed." And then the Buddha's like, "Well, it's because they don't see. So you have to have compassion for them." That's obviously not the story, but it's just kind of what I gathered, and I just thought it was like an up and out kind of up and out attitude. And you told the story about somebody who was getting teased, and she had a really up and out attitude where she was like, "Well, at least they're not picking on somebody else." And I don't know why it's really hard to call in, but I just think that the monastery is taking an up and out attitude to these times too. And I just want to really appreciate your receptive attitude and the I just felt really good when I heard that story, and it reminded me of some of the calls that I had listened to with you, and I guess I'm attempting to check in after a long time. I wish I didn't have to sound like this, but I just, you know, I'm stuck in a lot of ignorance. So, but I am really appreciative, and I'm sitting and slowly seeing, you know, some of the thoughts that just aren't really up and out. They're
right.
In.
And seeing the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll let the last caller be on, and unless you want.
Hey, well, thank you for calling in, because, you know, we don't get a lot of calls from North Dakota.
Yeah.
So I think you're the one out there. So, you know, be a good representative and keep in touch, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Valerie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. That was a great story, wasn't it?
It was a great story.
Yeah, I really like that. It's such an interesting twist, and it is such a Buddhist story that those people can't see the difference, though, and so then we're required to have compassion for them.
Wow.
I think it's a kind of a Jesus, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's
yeah.
Spirituality is a difficult proposition, isn't it? Yeah.
And worth it,
yeah. So thank you, Michael. Shall we talk next week?
Yes, and I'd like to thank all of our many callers and our many, many listeners for being here today with us.
Yes, we appreciate it.
Great.
All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.